What do I love? I love scotch.
Hello and welcome to UX Like Us, the podcast for user experience designers, researchers, strategists,
and ninjas.
I'm your user experience ninja, Roman Burkott. Joining me, as always, is Larry King. Larry, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Larry, I think your kind of origin story is interesting as it pertains to UX. You were a paid professional chef.
Yes, in my previous career, I did cook for a living, and I used to run kitchens for a living, and that was the career that I didn't necessarily choose, but I kind of fell into. But at some point, I decided that as I wanted to start a family, it got to the point where I didn't want to work every weekend, every evening, or every holiday for the rest of my career.
So that was the impetus that kind of propelled you out of that line of work. So how in the world did you arrive at user experience?
At some point, I decided that no, kitchens is bad. It's not what I want to do the rest of my life. And I think that mostly sunk in after I worked a 32-hour shift once.
Oof.
And yeah, it was around Christmas time in catering. Yeah, it was bad. And I went back to, it was the late 90s at this time, and I thought, well, web design, that's a pretty cool thing. That's what everybody's getting to. I'm going to do web design because that's the new cool hot thing, and this internet thing is probably going to take off.
I'm going to be a webmaster.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to be a webmaster because that was like the thing to be back then. And so I went to school, took some design classes and some HTML classes and, things like that. And eventually I, figured out that it wasn't so much the design, the visual design and, the technical side of things that was so interesting to me. It was more the, why do all these websites suck so bad? Right. Cause back in the late 90s, you go to a website to do something and there was darned if you could figure out actually how to do the thing or find the information you were looking for. Cause it was terrible. Everything was terrible back then. And this was the thing that I was like, these products are really, really bad. I bet there is a future in making these products way, way better than they are. And so that's actually what got me into user experience, was that drive to make digital products really good as opposed to the sorry state that they were in at the time.
Well, one of the questions I've run into, over the years, people are frequently asking, how do I get into UX? But the question I've never been asked is, should I get into UX? So I thought it would be interesting to kind of, dig into that a little bit, is like, who are the people who actually should be getting into UX? What makes a good UX practitioner? Possibly even, regardless of their experience level or what experience they have, in a previous career, what have you. But what are the things that would help them to be a good practitioner? The best way I know to address or to answer that question is to think, what are the things that have served me well in my career? And one of the big ones that I would look for in someone is humility, the ability to be humble. I think that humility is really important in any design approach, because you have to be able to hear what your users are saying to you. You have to be able to hear what your customers are saying to you. You have to be able to take that stakeholder feedback and critiques from your team and all these people. And while there's certainly an element of, having a backbone and defending your design, it's important that you also have the kind of, openness to hear feedback and actually consider it and, see if that's something that could really, improve a design or an interaction or what have you. So I think humility is a real important one, and something I like to see a lot in, people who are new to the field or when like talking to a job candidate. There's been interviews where I've had to tell somebody like, okay, so I appreciate that you're a team player and you've been talking about we, And now I'm going to invite you to say to talk about me. What did you personally do? Because, somebody who is humble, who does have humility, tends to have a hard time talking about I did this, because most of what we do, happens as a result of teamwork.
I agree with the humble thing. I think that it's interesting because most designers aren't perceived as humble people, especially the ones that have, the bigger personalities and, they're the visionaries or the people that are maybe not doing so much UX work, but more just doing agency design, wow factor work, right? And like, oh, I'm, the type of designers that are like, the more genius design as opposed to the user-centered design, right? So I think like if you look at, people who do genius design, I think it's more of a, it can tend to be more of a less humble position. Take somebody like a, Steve Jobs, who's, just wasn't really a designer, but he did make, big product decisions, and he was not a humble person. He was a person who was very decisive and saying, we're going to do this, and this is, no good.
Yeah, that's a great observation, is that there's a lot of individual players, right, that aren't necessarily team oriented. They can do great stuff. They really can put out great vision, but that's not necessarily going to make them work well in a team environment, which is typically the way UX has to get done. There's certainly a few exceptions.
Oh, absolutely. I agree. If you think about, the different types of design, there's, genius design, where you're just like, hey, I understand this problem. It's a problem I'm solving for myself, or, something I'm a problem I'm very, very familiar with and solving it from that point of view versus what we do in, enterprise UX, where we're trying to solve problems for customers. And I don't really work in that industry. I don't, the only way that I have any empathy for what their problems are is because I've talked to a lot of them and seen them, work in their environment and understand their problems because of all the contact that I've had with them. And that's where that the humble aspect comes into importance because you have to have that humility. You have to be able to put aside your own opinions and being able to really understand their problems and be able to get your ego out of the way to be able to, really empathize with the things that they face and be able to come up with solutions that, really, solve their problems as opposed to what you perceive the problems to be.
Well, and that's one thing I would say to young designers especially is to learn as early as you can how to not have your enthusiasm get tangled up in your ego. Because it is important for a designer to be enthusiastic about the problem that they're solving and the user that they're solving for, and that they got to be enthusiastic about the designs. You don't want to just put them up on a projector and say, here they are. There's a certain amount of salesmanship required with designs, but you have to make sure that people feel like you're approachable enough to be able to give you good quality feedback. Otherwise, it's just, oh, here comes that designer.
You have to be able to sell your ideas to people to get them implemented. And if you can't do that, especially if you're a, a more junior person, you need to find ways to be, to sell your ideas and get them into the, the vernacular, into the product work stream. And that requires not only, salesmanship, but also building relationships with the people that make the decisions. And so, not only do you have to be humble, but you also, have a little bit of salesmanship in yourself or be able to develop that skill in order to, make things happen. Because the best designs in the world were a bad idea to somebody at some point. Usually the person that has the power to make the decisions.
So another important trait in a successful UX practitioner is going to be that they're prolific. been reading a lot about how, artists produce, the best artists produce. A while back, I was working for this guy, Ant Creed. He was an IDO and an Intuit alum. And when he took over our department, he comes in and starts working on our process. And one of the first things he did was say, for any given ticket that you're working on, anything, I'd like to see 7 to 10 sketches first. Everybody kind of freaked out, like, wait, what? You want all these sketches? And I was the only nerd that was jazzed about it, because I had already been evangelizing for 6 sketches. Get yourself a 6-up sketch sheet, get some sketches out, and try some variations and some different approaches on the ideas. And the idea there is just simply that if you jump straight into a high fidelity design tool or approach, your thinking is going to zero in on a solution, and you're going to get kind of attached to it just by virtue of it having, come out of your own brain. And there's nothing to say that that's necessarily going to give you a bad outcome, but it just seems like the more variations that you do, the better your chances of producing really high quality work.
Yeah, I think that point comes out a lot in, I think being prolific and doing lots of sketches is one way to get past that first idea is the only idea you explore thing. I've seen this a lot in my experience, especially in very immature product organizations where people will sit around in a room, talk about a problem, then go right into solutioning, and the very first solution that somebody mentions that seems like it could be the right thing, everybody begins to start rallying around, and that becomes the thing that you do to solve the problem. And I see that a lot, and that
That's a tough one.
is, and so one way to get past that is to force people to not just talk about solutions, but put solutions onto paper and put lots of solutions onto paper so that we explore more than one option for something and we do it in a way that's very fast. Usually these, 6-up sketches exercises are time boxed, severely time boxed so that you force people to do things really, really fast. And so, you're kind of in those cases forcing people to be prolific. And is that something that is, easy for somebody to learn or pick up, right? I think there's some things that some traits that are, indicators of somebody being good in UX, but there's also traits that are, the point I'm trying to make is like there's traits about people that are relatively easy to train and you can develop somebody, and then there's other traits about people that you are very, very difficult to change, and it's never going to be something that they're going to pick up, right? Like for instance, traits that are relatively easy to change. You can teach probably somebody to be prolific, but if it's you're never going to make that a natural thing to them. That's going to be something they have to work on. Things like taking risks, right? People are some people may not be have aversions to taking risks, but that's a teachable thing. Having a focus on customers, that's another thing that maybe somebody doesn't do naturally, but you get them in an environment and you give them in the right experiences, that can be something, being customer focused can be something that can be developed. But then things like analytical skills. Whew, that's a harder one to, if somebody doesn't have analytical skills when you're interviewing them now, and that's important for the job that you have available, that's going to be a really tough one to change in somebody. Or just, creativity in general. If somebody doesn't have a natural, leaning towards being creative, that's going to be something very difficult to change. Things like energy and passion, those are traits of people that are just part of who they are, depending, what their personality is. And you can't change personalities. So I think the first one, the humble one, that's probably something that's harder to change. And if somebody has that naturally, that and that's something you're looking for, you know, that's a good sign. But things like being prolific, they may not have it, but that's something I think that it could be taught, and that could be, you know, a part of developing someone's skills as they're on their road to becoming a UX designer.
That's a great observation. Good process could actually develop things like that. Because even the case I was mentioning, nobody was really excited to do that many sketches, but by virtue of having the boss say, you must produce these, you know, that kind of hopefully taught some additional chops there. So that's a good point. You know, the whole premise of the podcast, right, is that there are things that can be easily learned, and there are things that are much harder to learn. And so, you know, what are the things that are kind of hard to learn that you'd rather somebody already have? Under that definition, I would throw out a strong written communication, because, man, that's a tough one to teach. I mean, it's certainly a teachable thing, but that's not a fast thing you're going to acquire on the job.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back into my past where somebody didn't have very good written communication skills and they got better over the time that I knew them. Because that's not something, you know, people sort of focus on. Like if you're, you know, in your job and you're looking for training, like those soft skills like that are not the things that people say, oh, you really need to take a writing class. but yeah, I think that's something that would be a very difficult thing for somebody to, you know, unless they, you know, you put, you know, that was really important to the position that they had, and made it a goal for them, you know, as their, you know, their manager, or they recognize it in themselves that they're bad at that, which is usually not the case. So yeah, that's a tough one.
So another thing that I think is totally learnable, but would be, you know, a background skill that would be super helpful moving into UX. Something that I just wish that they taught as more of a core part of UX in general is just business skills. So that's where I think like being a product manager moving into UX design, or, you know, even potentially marketing people who could move over successfully, due to an understanding of business, which, you know, generally boils down to a lot of human behaviors, right? All of our theories of economics and all that, they make assumptions about human behavior and how to modify it, right? So a lot of times having an understanding of business can help out with that kind of stuff.
Designers and UX people need to come to the job with their business hat first, because you know, that's the thing that we're really here to do. You know, we are not doing art, we are doing design, which is we're trying to solve problems for people, for, you know, either profit or sustainability of the organization, in some way. Just like having technical skills makes you understand more of the context that you are working.
So that's a good one. Do you have other traits that you've thought of?
So I think some of the ones that are harder to change, but maybe doable, people with good judgment.
Judgment.
You know, I think it's a hard one to teach, but I think it is something that over time you can, do, especially if you can give people more context to make those, you know, those decisions, which, you know, like we just talked about, you know, having more business savvy, having more understanding of the business, having more understanding of the underlying technical, you know, base that you're working with, having better understanding of the team environments and the people dynamics that you have in the organization will also help with that judgment. I think, you know, judgment is really taking all the context that's around you and using all of that to, you know, make a well-informed decision. And so I think it's something that's hard to change, but I think it's a doable thing. Negotiation skills, I think, is another one that is a hard one to teach, but yet is probably doable with the right type of training, the right immersion into things. And in UX, we're all often negotiating. Hard to train on, but it's something that that can be trained and people can learn. I think it takes a little longer than some other skills though. And as far as things that are really, really difficult to change, things like energy and passion, I think I talked about those earlier. Those are just things that are inherent in personalities of people. And so you really can't teach somebody to have energy and passion about something.
Yeah, there was a thing that kind of got fetishized in the UX community a while back, where it was saying, look for people who have a hobby or a side hustle that they're really, passionate about, because those are people, who are gonna be great. I think that's one of those, things that gets a little bit overblown, but nevertheless, it can be a reflection of the fact that, oh, here's somebody who, has things that they care about. They're gonna go the extra mile, certainly in their personal life, and hopefully that would be a similar approach shared at work. I know you have a crazy hobby building guitars. I mean, that's not
Yeah, I mean, I build guitars, I play in two bands, I record music, and I have a family with three children, so my and I do this podcast now, so I don't do much, honestly, but
And you
no,
actually get
but
stuff done at work too. I mean, it's
yeah.
crazy.
But I think the whole side hustle thing is, yeah, that may be indicator of a certain type of person, but I would not take somebody who has a so-called side hustle and somebody who doesn't and say, oh, the person with the side hustle is more passionate or ambitious. The other person may just have a family and and has other things that they are less visible than a side hustle might be. And so and of course you can't ask people about their family when you're interviewing. You have to be conscious of things like that so that you're not biasing yourself when you're, going through the evaluation of candidates, and weighing things like a side hustle more than other things that you may not see.
Yeah, it's important not to mistake a shortcut, a heuristic for the thing you're actually trying to learn.
Yeah, exactly.
Larry, I definitely don't want to make the show about the show, but it does bear mentioning that I'm just going to put this out here without having run it by you first.
Oh God, I'm scared.
I think you're going to be on board though.
Okay.
We have talked about the fact that we would like to have guests on the show. And so I'm going to put this out here that when we reach our first milestone of 100 subscribers, then we're going to start inviting guests on the show. So I'm putting that out there. If you've been listening, I really appreciate it. Your subscriptions to the podcast, your reviews do make a difference. Helps other people find the show. Our show is published pretty much everywhere, so anywhere that you might listen to podcasts, we should be available there. If you don't have one you prefer, we particularly recommend Overcast. It's a fantastic
Yeah, I love
podcast app.
Overcast. It's awesome. Subscribe to us there. They're good people making that app.
When you're listening in Overcast, you can it's a star, right? It's not a thumbs up, it's a star. You can star a show, and that helps with discovery in the app. So for those who have already given us a review, a follow, a subscribe, or a tweet for that matter, we really appreciate your input, your feedback to help spread the show. Get us to 100 subscribers, and we'll start bringing people on. Larry, who would you like to have on the show?
Who would I like to have on the show? Al Gore.
I don't suppose my impression will suffice.
Yeah, that'd be great. That's perfect. Who would you like to have on the show, Roman?
Shoot. We're not going to be bashful about inviting big names, people like that Jared Spool guy. I heard he knows some things. But I'm actually really excited to reach out to Bud Cadell. If you're not familiar with him, look him up. He's got an agency called Noble and OBL. And he puts out a lot of great information into the community, doing a lot of work on organizational design right now. So kind of a kindred spirit.
Do, 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 do. Stuff designers love. Woo! So, Roman, tell me about stuff designers love.
All right, so this is a new segment we want to try out on the show, and we'll do it for as long as you guys love it. Actually, we'll probably even do it long after that, and when it becomes annoying and obnoxious. Let's see. So this week, I have a recommendation for the Make Time book by Jake Knapp and John Suratsky. They were authors of the Sprint book for Design Sprints. And their new book, I believe it just came out this week, but I got an email from Jake Knapp. I'm on his email newsletter list, and in there he linked to a talk he gave at a conference that was kind of the backstory to this book. And so he talks about how at that time he had been living 6 years with a distraction-free iPhone. And so
What is that? I don't even know what that means. What? A what?
a distraction-free iPhone.
That seems like the opposite of what an iPhone is.
It's a deactivated
Did
iPhone.
he like put a different operating system on it? What did he just like not turn it on?
No, so he tells the backstory about like playing with his kids and then realizing like that he's on his phone, and I've certainly, experienced that moment myself. And I actually happen to be on day four as we record this, day four of a distraction-free iPhone. Separate topic, but I deleted rather than deactivated. I actually deleted Facebook finally. Just have wasted enough time in my life with that. But he advocates doing experiments the same way you would do with a design sprint, that you would set up an experiment and decide what it is you're looking to learn. And then he has like 80 different experiments in the book that he suggests, pick and choose and try stuff that you think might work for you and come up with your own. But one of them is to uninstall Slack and uninstall email and uninstall Twitter and uninstall basically everything from your phone. And so now you've got a phone that can text and make calls. And I happen to have a very good camera in my phone. And that's about all it does. And it's been challenging, I won't lie. Particularly for the things that like you make the excuse for. So for instance, we got to a meeting and we needed to communicate with something, and I couldn't Slack everybody through the back channel from my phone. Like I'm sitting in this meeting basically stranded. And so then like I had to pay attention and stuff. It was ridiculous.
Oh man, that's the worst, paying attention.
But yeah, I have a web browser. I can still get email if I really, really, really need it. But for the most part, I don't have anything buzzing or chiming at me. I've turned off notifications for everything that's not basically like calendar related. I still have like my reminders for calendars. Other than that, the phone is quiet and stays in the pocket. So.
Yeah, I did that same experiment a little bit. When I went to Disney,
That's right.
I have been really bad about taking actual vacations in the past, where I basically monitor what's going on at work the whole time I'm on vacation, and that's bad. And I've realized that that is a bad thing. So I decided when we went to Disney that I was not going to do that, and I turned off email on my phone, and I deleted Slack, and I deleted Twitter, and I deleted Facebook. And the only thing that I haven't brought back is Facebook
You're a free
since
man.
then.
Well,
Yeah. So.
it's funny because my routine before was especially it kind of makes sense based on half the team being on the East Coast. In the morning, I get up, I have my coffee, and I jump into Slack and I see if anybody's already chatting, and I check, my emails and get that out of the way. And, just kind of handle all that like little busy work before I get to the office so that when I get into the office, I'm ready to work. At least that was a theory. My realization today was like, oh man, I can't do all my like pre-work work. And now I have to get more stuff done at the office. But then I realized like that's the whole point, idiot, is like you actually get stuff done at the office. So, oh, by the way, if you need to get in touch with me, you'll have to text me directly because I don't have email or Slack on my phone anymore.
Now I know.
So that's we'll link to it in the show notes. There's the video by Jake Knapp, and then the book. I haven't started on the book, but given Jake and John's previous work, I'm sure it'll be quite good.
Yeah, it sounds fabulous. I'm looking forward to this book. I really like the sprint book. So I'm looking forward to taking a look at this one.
So Larry, what do you love this week?
What do I love? What do I love? I love scotch. I could tell you what designers hate, though.
Yeah.
Stuff designers hate. Woo! I'm sorry. I have a jingle for that too. Designers hate bad kerning. I remember once when I was oh my God, this was like years ago when Glee was like a big TV show
Oh
that everybody
yeah.
watched. Remember watching Glee? And I don't have the picture. I gotta find that picture of it. But I like there was a one at the when they were going to a commercial break, they would throw up a black tile and it said just Glee, all lowercase in their font and everything. And oh my God, the kerning on it was ridiculously terrible. There was like so much space between the L and the E, and it was I really like to find that picture because it was just really, really bad. I was just like, this is a professional program with people making millions of dollars, and there's this one word on the screen, and it's the name of the show. And you would think somebody would have paid attention to this, but they did not. It was terrible. Now, mere mortals look at that and go, what's the problem? But designers, designers
Right, you had one job.
look at things like that and they just start to twitch. Oh, I found a Reddit about the Glee bad kerning, so it wasn't just me. It's real. It's on Reddit.
Reddit will instantly validate any feeling I'm having.
I mean, the L and the E's are literally touching, and then there's like a space between the L and the G. It's like, what is going on here?
So it's like
It's
good,
terrible.
Lee.
Yeah, it's gutly.
Ugh. Well, once again, thanks for sharing and reviewing the show. Our audience is growing, and we look forward to booking people for interviews. And we'd just like to hear it from you, though. Who would you like to hear from? Be sure to tweet us. I'm at Superman, and Larry is at LA King. That's it for today. Thanks, everybody.
Do 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 do